Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Computer Vision in Production podcast show. A podcast show where we talk all about everything computer vision, from the individual components of the technology, including vision, cameras, and deep learning, right through to hearing about some of the most interesting applications that companies are using at the moment. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Computer Vision in Production podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Kelly. Today's guest is Florian Litch, who is a senior AI engineer and team lead at 20 Billion Neurons. Florian, it's great to have you as part of the show. Welcome.
Yeah, excited to be here, Anthony. Good morning.
This has been one of the longer podcasts in the production cycle. I even think we were speaking years ago before I even joined Trust in Soda about trying to do a podcast together. But, you know, at the time, 20 Billion Neurons, I suppose you weren't where you were product ready. Or where you wanted to be to start, you know, putting your face out there. But, you know, we're here now. So I suppose, like, why don't you jump in, give us a little bit of an introduction to yourself, a little bit of an introduction to 20 Billion Neurons, and then we'll kind of take it from there.
Yeah, perfect. All right, let's go ahead. Yeah, so I'm Florian Litch. I work as an AI engineer with a focus on deep learning and computer vision. So really excited to be here because of that. Before working in that field, I actually worked in more traditional software and web development in a range of different product companies. So what I'm really interested in is this combination of kind of a product development mindset with a really a focus on the end user using the product, but combining it with the with AI and computer vision technologies, and also how to kind of build an efficient development process around it, and how to build the teams around really building computer vision and AI products. In my current role, I've been at 20 Billion Neurons as an AI engineer since 2017, so close to 3.5 years now. And I'm also a team lead for our Germany-based engineering team and kind of a part-time scrum master for our overall, we have 4 development teams. So 20BN is a German-Canadian company, so we have an office in Berlin and one in Toronto. Obviously now it's fully remote, but we've always operated very remotely. So even though we have teams on 2 continents, we work together on a daily basis. Our product is AI powered fitness app. So you can imagine it's like a virtual personal trainer that runs on your phone and basically gives you feedback on your workout performance through the camera on your phone. And that's all running on device. So the neural network that's analyzing the video stream is running on device. 20BN also offers different data licensing things. So we've actually released several video data sets, large scale video data sets for research. We also do commercial video data licensing. And we've recently started open sourcing more of our internal tooling for running video classification models on mobile devices. So that's the overview.
Really, really cool. Really cool. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but it's if I remember back, were you guys always in the domain of being a fitness, I suppose, like, you know, a virtual trainer application? I can't remember if I think back to almost 2.5 years ago. Was that still the domain you guys were in?
Good question. And the answer is no. So we've come a long way since then. So when I joined 20BN in 2017, we did a lot of really still applying the, let's say, neural network architectures that we knew worked on a lot of academic solutions to bring them to industry projects, mostly projects. So what we did back then is do a lot of one-off or two-off projects with several partners from the industry. So we worked with automotive, built different kinds of gesture recognition and activity recognition models. And from then on, we basically took the next steps to becoming more of a actual product building company, and with a slight detour in trying to build retail products, we now build a fitness product. And while that sounds meandering, it made a lot of sense going from step to step. And we always had this technology that works, but we had to find the right form factor that makes sense for the use case and for the market, really, to find the right fit there.
That's it. That, you know, it sparked my memory there when you said retail. It's also great that you mentioned you guys are, I suppose, a very collaborative company from remote, given the times of today, with COVID, you know, you guys probably weren't scrambling to adapt to the current situation, which also helps. And then, you know, again, probably another way that 20 billion neurons could see good things out of COVID is, you know, a lot of people have actually started to use these fitness applications through your mobile apps. Look, you look at the USA, they've all gone crazy for a Peloton bike. it's like the new wave, you know. Everyone is now at home saying they're cycling Tour de France routes in the living room. But personally, for me, I'm probably more on the lines of a personal trainer type of product myself.
Yeah, it's curious, right? But it's also curious to think of the good aspects of the pandemic, right? With all the things that are going on, it was just a coincidence. And I mean, we've started working on the fitness case close to 2 years ago now. Initially, what we built was more of a product, more for fitness, for gyms, for hotels, maybe. So I don't know if you've seen some of our old promo videos from back then. So it was like a human-sized display that you would put in a hotel gym or something where you could do a personal trainer experience without actually having a trainer there on site all the time. And just this, that was really interesting. That's where the fitness case came from. And we've luckily had many talented fitness actually experts join us since then. So we're not only engineers building a fitness product anymore, but it's really gone through the whole company, this fitness shift. But yeah, that wasn't the right form factor. And then we've built the iOS app, which launched in, what was it, May 2020. So yeah, that was right after the pandemic hit, but coincident and a little weird to think about it.
I remember you told me, I don't have an iPhone, I'm Android. So I did download the initial app you sent over to me on my girlfriend's phone. I did use it. Don't get me wrong, I thought it was really cool. But because I was using my girlfriend's phone, you know, my willingness to just go and take her phone for an hour was probably less than using my own phone.
You're in luck. We now have the Android version out. It's still it's an early access version, but you can use it. Just go to the Play Store and search for Fitness Ally, and you should find it right away.
Yeah, no, I'll definitely look that out, because you know I was using a personal trainer between lockdown one, mm-hmm. before going into the second one. The opening between one and two, I signed up for a personal trainer in Ireland, and it was really enjoyable. Kind of what gave me the spur to get into. I would actually say I'm in the best fitness,
oh, really?
Physical condition in my life. I'm the oldest I've been. But I think when you have a personal trainer and you give that accountability,
mm-hmm. yeah.
to someone else that's not just you, it makes a huge difference.
What is it that you look for in a personal trainer?
Do you know what? Because now I'm a little bit fit, I look for something a little bit different. You know, I initially looked for the guy who had the body that I thought I wanted. And I was like, oh yeah, this guy looks like he was the type of guy that got on stage, competed in competitions. He looked great. He gave me a lot of exercises, put on a lot of muscle, but I was never actually trimming down. This guy's obviously got great genetics.
Mm-hmm.
Me, not so much. Whereas now I'm quite fit. I want to look at health. I want to try and get, you know, maybe a personal trainer who can tell me about my macros, about my diet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also a vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, am I supplementing too much protein, mm-hmm. with too many protein shakes or protein bars? Is that okay?
Yeah.
I don't know. But, you know, my overall macros, calories, gut health, that's kind of what I've started to go towards now.
Yeah, so this holistic. The whole holistic approach, basically. And in the, I'm curious, so in the personal, let's say in the sessions, what is it that really you think, what does the personal trainer give you that makes you choose a personal trainer experience instead of, I don't know, the other offers that are out there, which are plentiful?
Yeah, so it's just quite, I suppose I'd say it was quite simple. You wanted someone to tell you what to do,
uh-huh.
that you know is going to guarantee results.
Yeah.
And you know they're going to guarantee your results because you just look at them and they are the result of what they're already doing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've been training on and off in the gym for 8 years. I've never really put on much muscle mass, mm-hmm. much size, never really trimmed down. Whereas over, you know, since I've signed up to this personal trainer, maybe it's just kicked something in the back of my mind that has me doing a lot more personal research and stuff like that as well. Mm-hmm. And I suppose I'm getting a whole lot more bought into the total process. Mm-hmm. It's not a case of I'll eat what I want, I'll have beers on the weekend, but I'll train, so it's okay. It's more, you know, if I'm going through a period of looking to grow muscle, I'll understand that, yeah, that's fine. But if I'm looking to restrict myself and lose a bit of weight, I'll probably have to knock the alcohol on the head for maybe 4 to 6 weeks while I'm in that process.
Okay.
So I was also educating myself.
Yeah.
But they also, he helped me with that education. You know, previously I was just like, I'll just do what I want.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It reminds me of the Atomic Habits approach by James Clear. It's how you introduce habits in your life and then after a while really change your mindset underneath, right? You're not longer a person that has a fitness habit, but you are an athlete or something like that, right? So that, like, really perceiving yourself as this, I'm now a person who's a sports person, rather than just, oh, there's this drag. I have to, But yeah, it's really interesting what you say. So it sounds like what helps you, and I can definitely relate to that, is the accountability aspect of it, right? And then that's also one of the things that we found and try to put in the product is, yeah, I mean, there are so many fitness apps out there, right? How can ours be different and offer a little more than the others? And that's the, what we think is that what the computer vision aspects really offers is we just have more, we see more of what's actually going on rather than just having, I don't know, like an over-glorified stopwatch on your phone, right? It's really reacting to what you're doing, giving you that feedback. And also, I mean, the form factor is a 3D character that is supposed to engage you, right? So that's, even though it's not a human, it's supposed to be more of a human-like experience in that there's someone you are accountable to, and they're obviously the stats that automatically count your reps and so on, and how well you did today, so you can also see your progress and hold yourself accountable to that, basically. Yeah.
Well, look, one thing he has started me doing that I think changed is I write down before I train what I'm going to exercise, how many sets, how many reps. Mm-hmm. That was a game changer. I never used to mark anything. So, you know, I think if the computer vision avatar is doing that for you, it's telling you what to do, what your weights are, that is, you know, takes out a lot of the manual labor, even though, you know, it's working out, it's all manual labor, but it takes out the actual, I suppose, the documentation work you forget goes with it.
Yeah. And it can push you just a notch further than you would have gone without. So, I mean, you have a timer running out and she counts your number of reps and she will tell you if you're just like one short from your personal record, right? So that is something that can just push you that tiny bit further than you would normally do if you were just counting for yourself, maybe.
So let's talk about the computer vision avatar. So it's in your mobile phone. Just tell us a little bit more about what it looks like and how it works.
So if you use the app, it's like I mentioned, it's a 3D character, so like a virtual personal trainer. And from the computer vision aspect, there's a video classification network running in real time as you do your workout. So we basically analyze, are you doing the right exercise? Are you doing that exercise correctly? How well are you doing the exercise? Which kind of mistakes are you making right now? And then the logic around gives you feedback on your form, actually does the scoring automatically and so on. So when we started off working on these, well, we call them video understanding networks, but it's in this particular case, it's really mostly video classification. We were using these big chunky GPUs, right? obviously, to train the networks, it's quite compute intense, and then to run them like off the shelf as they come out of your training procedures, it's still quite GPU or CPU hungry. That also explains why initially we went for this approach of let's package it up as this huge display. It makes sense. You have a 3D character and it's actually life size. So that's quite impressive to interact with a virtual character that is almost the same size as you. But it also had the nice benefit that we could just chuck a GPU on the back of it and have it run there. But I mean, technology is luckily moving at an impressive pace. When we started looking at, okay, what would we need to really run this on a phone without having to send data to the cloud? And I mean, in particular, if you look at the European market with regards to GDPR and so on, it's obviously it's a liability. Any data you don't have to send anywhere is better. And also just privacy wise, I think, I mean, I wouldn't want to, I mean, imagine you in the morning when maybe some people do the workout, do you really want to have that video sent somewhere? Probably not. So that really was the driver to push for having this run on device. And yeah, when we looked at the, what was it back then, the iPhone chips from like 2 years ago, they had very sophisticated hardware acceleration for neural network operations already. So it was surprisingly easy to just squeeze our net a little bit to make it run on there. And since then, back then it was the newest, I think, iPhone XS or something like that was the first one where we made it work. And since then, we've gone back to the architecture and see how can we make it just a little more efficient. So we are now supporting iPhones all the way back to the iPhone 8 and now also many Android devices. With many, I mean that in the Android space, obviously the hardware chips are a bit more fragmented, but they are nice abstractions, so we can just allow it to run on a lot of devices. And yeah, so really the hardware progress of the recent years has really made it very easy to run these big neural networks in real time. So it's quite impressive.
Yeah, I can't remember. It was a movie I was watching, and I also found it to be quite relevant to, I think maybe it was called The Circle. And it was basically about like a company like Facebook.
Yeah.
And they were real sci-fi style, you know, but they were creating all these really high processing pieces of technology that could run by themselves, cameras. And I suppose it just linked back to me is that, you know, everyone wants the highest processing power as you want available in your hand. And it makes me think, you know, with like Facebook and everything like that, had social media not become so popular all that time, would people care about how much processing power is in your hand? Or would it, like, it's technically after having a direct impact into, you know, edge computing without even meaning it.
Yeah.
That's one thing that, you know, it just came up out of nowhere. And, you know, a lot of this processing power now available.
That's right.
Wasn't built for what we're now using it for. It was probably because, you know, they wanted to introduce a better camera so someone can have a more Instagrammable lifestyle.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good observation. And I think
because that's what sells.
Yeah, it goes back to also the initial breakthroughs in deep learning and computer vision, right? In 2012, when suddenly it all took off, like the all the pieces were in place already, but suddenly someone combined them. And what made it work was gaming hardware, right? It was the GPUs that weren't developed to be used in research. It was gaming hardware that was developed for consumers. And you're right, it's now the next, like the continuation of that. What is the next level of computer, like consumer hardware? Yeah, the mobile phones. And yeah, mostly because of social media, I guess, and the always on mentality, they've become so ubiquitous that it was just a matter of time until all the big hardware also ends up in there, basically. Yeah.
Cool. And so I just wanted to touch on the avatar again. Just to step it back, we kind of breezed over one point. Where does the voice or the NLP or, you know, the shouting to get your next rep, where does that start and where does it end? You know, if you're documenting, maybe if you link up or you're putting in your calories, your macros, is it giving you live feedback on that? Is it text? Is it voice? Or what's the voice applications built in with this also?
Maybe just so take one step back further. I think what we also, I think part of the 20BN pitch is also to build the continuation of what we now see as the everyday AI we see around us is often voice based, right? It's it's your Siri, it's your Alexa and so on. So sorry if anything went off there in the background, so to someone listening. But, and it's amazing how far this has come, right? But the idea of machines that can become part of our everyday lives, limiting their sense to just the acoustic signal, feels kind of falling short on the visual richness of looking at the world is, I think, core of the human experience. And so part of the 20BN vision is, yeah, taking it a step further from these voice assistants to, I mean, long term, I think maybe we'll, I don't know how long it will take, but ultimately we'll probably see these sci-fi robots as part of our everyday lives. But we're not there yet, right? So this, the stepping stone that 20BN sees, what we call these virtual beings. So any kind of embodied AI that has more than just the acoustic capability, but yeah, in our case, vision and hearing capabilities. And that's where the idea for the avatar comes from. Putting this now in the fitness context, it's yes, looking at you while you're working out, but also listening to what you say. So we have, you can, while you're working out and you don't like a particular exercise, you can, for example, skip an exercise, but maybe you don't want to go to your phone that's sitting there at an angle looking at you on the floor and, like, I don't know, fiddle around with your sweaty hands or what have you. So
put it back down.
So what we do...
I can feel the pain of that already.
Yeah. So we also have some NLP in there so that you can use voice commands to skip an exercise, take a break, turn off your music, what have you. And for that, it's also part of our models that run inside the app. We've, like, for the very first prototype, obviously we went with one of the out of the box NLP offerings, but we quickly found that converting voice to text and then having that be parsed and then maybe even running that on the cloud really gives you also, I mean, again, there's the privacy part, but also kind of a delay sometimes. That what we did is we went ahead and did what we always do. We try to learn this end to end. We don't use, in the vision part, we don't use any pre-computed features like pose estimation, for example, which maybe you would expect in such a body focused use case. We always train our models end to end. So that's in the vision case, that's from the raw pixels to the classified, like, subtle mistake you've made for this particular exercise, for example. And in the audio part, it's on the raw audio signal, recognizing the intent that the user was trying to say. So that model is also running inside the app, and it gives us a very quick response time and also quite a strong robustness to noise. So because we don't have any in-between translation to like a text model or words, no typos can happen. It all happens on a quite robust, raw audio classification kind of. And these two things then are together integrated in this fitness experience.
That's really cool. Now, look, before we kind of go into the journey of getting to where you are now, what sort of computer vision applications are you looking at? So, you know, I'm guessing from obviously quite simple object recognition, object tracking, gesture recognition, you know, but you are even going through, as you mentioned, to look at where people are misstepping or probably even looking at perspiration. What capabilities have you got? What can you see through the mobile phone with someone exercising? What can you actually see?
Yeah, so we've always focused on the human action and human activity. And you also see that when you look at the datasets we've released for researchers to use for free. One is a traditional hand gesture recognition dataset. And the other has a more generic term, is called something-something. And that one looks at not only what does the human do, but what does the human do in the world surrounding them. That means human-object interactions, and that's really the sphere that defines what we look at is understanding human activity in the world, and that has meant that we've always been collecting targeted data for the use cases that we are for the specific use cases that we've been working on, and that would be gesture recognition, and also more for some of the automotive projects that maybe look a bit more in the future, not so distant future maybe, is also recognizing if a driver is distracted, for example. And driver being distracted can also be talking on the phone, right? That's a human object interaction right there. And so with all these, this like bulk of video that we've collected across these different projects and use cases that we've worked on, we can, with transfer learning, apply all of this also to our fitness use case now. So even though we've now have what the actual in-app network classifies is all very fitness related, so across these, 30, 40, 50 exercises we now support with hundreds of nuanced different kinds of executions, all of this is only possible because we pre-train on this very rich data of human activities and human object interactions. And because of that, the networks are able to have a very rich understanding of what human motion in the world looks like. So on comparably little data that can now, they can then be applied to new actions and new activities. So with fitness now, when we add a new exercise, we don't need these thousands, tens of thousands, or even more samples to add one more class. We need significantly fewer because the networks can transfer learn from this existing rich data source that we've collected over the years.
Nice. So then, if we're talking going through the years, if we talk going back, so she said, 20 billion neurons weren't always a product company, very much research focused. In fact, I know 20 billion neurons is, I suppose, the ideology behind the name comes from, making machines the next or as capable as the human brain, right? 20 billion neurons connecting them, right?
Yeah, the 20 billion is the rough estimate of how many neurons in our brain are used for the visual understanding of it. Yeah, I think for the full brain, you would estimate like 100 billion or something in that range. Like, it's always off by a factor of 10, depending on what it is. But yeah, that's where the name comes from, that's right.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask, and there's probably a lot of companies out there, lots of people out there who have these fantastic research capabilities of these research ideas. What's the journey like? How do you go from research into production? I appreciate, now we've got a lot more technologies available to help with that than we did in 2017.
Yeah.
What's your advice, or what was the journey like at 20BN?
That's a good question. And I think really it's always a step-by-step process. But I think if we started this, let's say, demo stage of something that you've built. I don't know, can be anything from a company internal demo that you've built for something, and then this draws attention to it, and then you decide, okay, let's build this out further. Let's go from this experimenting, fiddling around with technology, to actually having a product. I think there are some discrete steps that you can do to really bring this closer to production. I think first what's important to do is leaving this, as anyone who's ever built like a small demo of any kind of technology has probably done, is like built this debug interface, where you'll see, like numbers running through, and then you see, oh, it's the highest number, so it has recognized what I've just built. But I think to go towards more of a product thinking, you have to package it up in some form so that people who are not the people developing it can experience it. And that's when you get when you start getting feedback from actual people using that demo, right? So that's what we did, is we built these gesture debug interfaces, but then we started connecting them to, let's control a small jump and run game. Let's control a slide deck without having to touch your keyboard, things like that. And then you immediately get the first feedback on, oh, this is great, but it sometimes misclassifies. When you swipe left, you go forward two slides instead of just one. And then you have your first learning experience of how can I improve the technology to actually work better for this particular use case. I think that's the first step. And then as a next step is not only playing around with it, but actually putting real potential users in front of it and learning from them, right? So when you have... let's stick to this gesture recognition example. When you then talk to, I don't know, industrial company, right? And they have like on the factory floor, they want to use this so that people can control something without having to, because they have their hands full with something else. I don't know. You may find that the people there are actually wearing gloves while they're working on the factory floor, right? You learn a lot when looking at the actual setting where the product is supposed to be used. And then maybe it's more important that your gesture recognition model can also work when people are wearing, like, I don't know, heavy-duty, thick gloves, rather than spending another 2 months on cracking this additional academic benchmark that you've seen on a recent paper, you know. So and then you start to go closer to your actual users, to a market. You learn from that, and you can improve the technology. And then it's iteration. So you start collecting more data to help with these new things that you found, and with that you go back to your users, and you can iterate on the software. And yeah, with that iteration, you quickly learn that, well, you can only iterate efficiently if you start building kind of like an agile process around it, right? So it already sounds iteration already sounds like an agile process, and then your organization forms around that process as well. And because you shouldn't lose sight of the actual use case, I think you should put not the pure technological drive in front anymore, but really listen to what the problem dictates your technology should solve, right? So I think powered by AI is not what I read that on LinkedIn the other day. I don't know who it wrote, but it was powered by AI, quote unquote, is not a feature, it's an implementation detail, right? So obviously it allows these amazing new interactions, but really what you want to do is solve real problems and not just build yet another fancy demo. And then, once you've set that up, then, and maybe only then, you should also look at the additional engineering aspects of it, like building an automated pipeline that automatically tests everything, makes sure you're... put all the existing best practices of software engineering in there as well, right? You need tested code. You need reliable software artifacts that you can roll out, because you are now building a product. You are no longer building an like a Jupyter notebook that only runs on that one machine that you put in the corner of the office, you know? With all of these steps together, I think you can bring something from this tech demo state to a product state.
I have a question. I'm going to relate this one back to 20BN's fitness application. Mm-hmm. What would you prefer, the feedback from personal trainers in the industry or the feedback from potential customers?
Both. So I think you definitely have to put it in front of the actual users and listen to them. And that's the fitness, the person who wants to do a workout. Because you realize there are just, does it work well? Does the classification work well? Is it, or they are doing something wrong? Do they actually get the feedback they are supposed to get? However, as someone coming in from the technical direction, you need the expert knowledge, and that's the personal trainer or the physiotherapist or the domain experts who actually understand, look, when you do a squat, it's really important that your back is in that shape, that your knees are in that position and so on. And it's something that, well, on the basis you can probably read up on, but you can never, as someone from the technical direction, ideally you come from both angles at once, right? But I mean, I can't say that for myself. So I need to talk to the people who actually know what is right for the user. So, and then also get their feedback. Like what should a workout look like? Should I have harder exercises in the beginning or in the end or sprinkled in between? And for that, it's important not only to talk to the expert, but to have them very, very close. So our current product owner, he's a personal trainer and he has a very strong fitness background, but also this technical understanding. And that's really then what should drive the product forward, having this domain knowledge and understanding how to apply the technology with that domain knowledge to solve actual people's problems. And those are the people who you then talk to when you've built a new version of the app.
That's very, very useful that you've got a personal trainer, product owner, and very unique in the AI industry.
yeah, that's right.
Cool. And, you know, look, quickly before we close off, you know, towards the end, where I want to ask some other questions, I suppose, about the product, but we mentioned it quickly around neural networks and, oh, sorry, not even neural networks, where we spoke about the computer vision applications. But now, you know, if it's more focused on the neural networks for vision, you know, user, we've already touched on, you know, form checker, but that's obviously a lot of training. I wanted to ask you more around the line of pose estimation, mm-hmm. because, you know, you've mentioned to me here in some of the notes, it's a commodity and there's many frameworks available nowadays. What I want to ask is, there's a lot of companies out there focusing around human-centered, human-focused AIs, body pose estimation, face pose estimation, lots of these companies sprouting up, building products around this. From your advice, building products that are now on the market, when can you use it, or when should you roll out your own? What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, so I think, pose estimation is... I think I called it a commodity in our notes, but what I mean by that is when you look at, I think even, I don't know, the Apple like framework examples include an example of pose estimation, right? So many vision frameworks out there now just have that come out of the box. So you pass in an image and out comes the skeleton of a person. And then it's the obvious question, well, why should I not use that, but instead go through all this hassle of collecting millions and millions of videos to build a fitness app, right? That's the question, I think. And I think you don't necessarily have to. I think you can very well start off using these, like body pose, or you mentioned also, there are other like hand poses and things like that. Really to go into this iteration mode, I think it's perfect. Grab one of these out of the box solutions and build your first MVP with it, and then start experimenting with it in your use case. And so what we came from a different angle, in that we've pushed this end-to-end learning pipeline forward over the years, that now with this huge store of data, we can the model can detect nuances in the raw pixels that in a pure pose model gets lost, right? So you may find out in your use case that you reach a point where pose estimation or these other use cases, you could probably apply a similar thinking where it doesn't really where it's not enough anymore. I mean, for pose estimation, I think it's great in that it abstracts away a lot of the complexities of the natural world, right? But that also means a lot of the complexity of the natural world is lost on it, right? So there's no information about the objects surrounding the person, for example. So if we, in our case, we don't use any exercises where you need any additional equipment. But you could very well imagine that it's important to recognize if the person is holding a weight or not. And if you have pose estimation models, you then need to go in and see, okay, how can I probably need an additional object detection model, and then you start, I don't know, putting additional things on the side, and then I think in this iterative process you will realize either is it worthwhile having these additional solutions on the side, and does it solve the problem, or is it worth looking at a full end-to-end pipeline if you have the means to get the data for that. So it's a typical it depends scenario, I would say.
Cool. No, nice. Look, really, really appreciate that. I suppose, I just kind of have some quick fire questions to ask before we close out. Sure. First one, you know, your application at the moment is on a mobile phone. You know, given the technology advances we're having, do you think these will stay on mobile phones? Will these move into other applications, you know, maybe like fitness mirrors? I'm not even talking like just a stand-up mirror, but maybe even like a wall-mounted mirror or something like that, which could, you know, maybe be like 8x6, something quite well-sized. You can see yourself. Is that in the pipeline, or are you kind of going to stick towards the mobile market, mobile phone market?
Ah, that's a good question. right now, really, that form factor is our focus, because I think there's nothing as ubiquitous as the smartphone right now for us really to reach many people. But you're right, and that it's that there's huge potential, and yeah, once you've established your your foothold basically in the fitness market, which is a very crowded market, right? It's interesting to look at additional form factors. I haven't given this too much thought, and right now our focus is really the smartphone. But I agree, like a smart mirror would make sense. And that's where we came from initially, right? We had this huge display, and maybe I would now go for a form factor that's slightly in between so that it makes more sense to have in your personal space if you feel comfortable having that at home. And then I think also I would personally only put it here if I know that the video can be analyzed on device. I agree with these. There are many accelerators right now that you can buy that you can just chuck into these so that you can already run them with a bit of specialized hardware. But I think it's not going to be long until you don't even need any specialized hardware anymore, and any, I don't know, off-the-shelf SoC platform will just support it. It's only a matter of time, I think.
Yeah, I think so. That's kind of why I asked. You know, you're talking from... The reason why I'm saying is, you know, you can go from a mobile application to kind of like a home gym kind of expert.
Yeah.
But instead of taking up a room, you can take up... instead of taking up an entire room, you can take up a wall, which is with someone who's now trying to do a lot of these home workouts. Space is a problem.
Yeah.
You know, I've bought some equipment and now I've nowhere to get anything extra, and I'm always moving things when I want to do a workout.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, I know that. I mean, for us, so the way it works, you put the phone on the floor at a slight angle so that it can see you, but then you can do it in any corner. But I always find myself picking that one corner, because just in general, it's not even only a technological problem. It's just being able to work at home really depends on where you live, right? So, I mean, I have friends who live in Japan, and in their shoebox-sized flats, I doubt they'll be able to do a full-on cardio workout with like all the spatial requirements you need just to stretch your arms. but yeah. I mean, but looking ahead, I think it's also, I mean, now we are so focused on working out at home, but I think, fingers crossed, if travel and that picks up again, one of the advantages of having things on your phone is you can do it anywhere, right? So when you're, I mean, not maybe in your personal travel, depending on what kind of workout habit you've built, but if you're thinking more of a business person who doesn't have the steady gym rhythm, I think that's also...
Yeah,
an option.
You need to get in a quick 40-minute pump,
yeah,
before, or to clear your mind after, you know, you spend 4 or 5 hours traveling in the morning. You get to a hotel or an Airbnb, you've got an hour before bed. Good, and but you can set them up to be routine, that they're stuff you're familiar with. The worst thing about, you know, traveling and trying to do a workout or do something is that it's unfamiliar to you.
Yeah,
the location, the space. So, you know, having something familiar would definitely help with that as well, I think. One last question, Florian. I know we've had a lot more we wanted to cover, but, you know, we've missed a couple of things. What's the biggest challenge you guys are facing at the moment at 20BN?
Right now, well, I think from the process that I've talked about, like this journey that we took from being a very research-focused company to being a technology provider to partners from the industry, to now building our own product, I think that journey isn't done yet. So it's not only a technological challenge in that, I mean, we talked about form factor, we've talked about being able to collect the right data, being able to collect enough data. It's also a mindset challenge, right? You need to shift a little from, oh, look, we're building AI technology, that's amazing, to, okay, what's the problem we are solving? Who are we solving it for? And how can we make sure that our product best serves those people? And that's, organizationally, that's a challenge to really, with a lot of people who come from this very research-heavy background, to, yeah, really collectively do that mindset shift. So that's something that is, I wouldn't say a current challenge, but it's really something that is a constant process to remind ourselves why we're doing what we're doing. Aside from that, we're looking at new frontiers. As I mentioned in the beginning, we've been open sourcing more of our internal tooling now, and kind of also, yeah, keeping the focus, I think, of being able to, yeah, provide this, build a product, but still being able to stay ahead and pushing the research boundaries further. I think finding that right balance is, yeah, I think that's the challenge. Finding the right balance between product and research work.
Great. Look, it takes us up to pretty much bang on time, Florian. Thank you, Florian. That was fantastic, and that will take us up to the end of the show. So for everyone listening, this is the Computer Vision in Production podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Kelly. Today's guest was Florian Lech, who's a senior AI engineering team lead at 20 Billion Neurons. Florian, it was great to have you on the show.